radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, good morning. Ooh, what's that about? I've got some kind of echo going on and I don't know where it's coming from. Let me switch that off and see. Let's put that back on again. There we go. The echo's stopped being there now. So it's 2 minutes past four. You're listening to Free Association. My name's Dennis. And you're listening to Revolution Radio, which is a listener-supported station. So if you can help out, there's a place at Revolution Radio to make a donation. Just follow the links from the donations tab in the top menu, and you'll find a place where you can make a contribution financially. And if you can't do that, come and talk to us in the chat room and contribute that way. It's a friendly bunch in the chat room. They can be challenging, but it's a friendly bunch, generally speaking. And I'm the only thing I've got planned out, really, I did make some notes, but I'm not, unless I run out of things to say completely, I'm not going to refer to my notes, I don't think. But it's the 25th anniversary of me having my Reiki initiation, my first Reiki initiation, 25 years ago, first weekend of April. So I thought I'd talk about that a little bit and then see where we go from there. And it's kind of vaguely on the topic of vibrational medicine, because that's where my head was 25 years ago. And so we're talking 1998, April 1998 is where we're at the moment. And I'd just been promoted at work. I was having a stressful time at work. And I went looking for a Buddhist meditation class in January of 1998 because it was getting very stressful. And I found a Buddhist meditation class in Covent Garden in the centre of London. I was living in Stoke Newington at the time and working on Fleet Street. I was working for Reuters News Agency on Fleet Street on the switchboard. And then I got promoted and I was assistant supervisor for a switchboard of 18 people altogether. So there was, 12 staff plus a couple of assistants plus six temporary staff, so a lot of people basically, and I was kind of handling the day-to-day running of the switchboard while the supervisor was away doing a project to upgrade the hardware. And so it was a stressful time. It was an interesting time and a good time in some ways, but not so good in other ways. Very kind of compressed and pressurized. And I learned a lot from that. I learned that I don't want to work on switchboards very much after that. I did still do it for a little while, but with less enthusiasm than I took the job at Reuters. Anyway, so I found this meditation class with the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order in the January. I did 6 or 7 weeks of that, 6 weeks I think it was, on a Monday evening after work. I was finishing work about 5 or 5.15 sometimes, walking up the Covent Garden, which was about, what, 10-minute walk, 15-minute walk. And then at the meeting rooms in Covent Garden, which I can't remember exactly where they were, somewhere by where the buskers are, not too far from there. Where on earth was it? It was a Covent Garden meeting room, so I'm sure it was downstairs in a room that looked like a yoga place. So floorboards, like a sprung floor, and it might have been a dance studio, actually. I don't actually remember. I think there was mirrors on the wall, so it could well have been a dance studio. Anyway, so I did this meditation class, mindfulness of breathing, and metta bhavana, which is a kind of a healing, a compassion meditation. So it's cultivation of concentration, breath control, mind control, thought control, and compassion together, which I think makes a difference. If you only do the breath control and the kind of thought control without the compassion, I think that's going to take you to a place where you could end up being a sociopath. You could end up without any empathy for other people. But the compassion element of it is an important part of that. It brings the individual and the collective together, brings the individual and the group together in a way that is quite well constructed, I think. So after that, I went on a Buddhist retreat. I signed up for a week-long, progressively more and more silent retreat, which must have been March. No, it was the weekend I did the Reiki initiation, and then I went off on the Monday to this retreat. So it was literally 2 days of energy healing, for want of a better phrase, or vibrational healing, and then a Buddhist silent retreat, which was very, very challenging indeed. I knew it was going to be challenging, and I'm prepared to challenge. I'm still prepared to challenge myself. I do a lot of pushing myself into places that I've never been before in terms of skills and experience. But progressively more and more silent Buddhist retreat, which I'd forgotten about, and it wasn't what I was going to talk about, but let's do it. It was a very challenging experience. So I think I probably, in my head, I imagined myself dying a couple of times during that week. There was a letting go process going on, undoubtedly. I remember sitting in a bird watching platform in a tree, like a raised platform, in a little shed, basically, in this tree, in the middle of a thunderstorm. And we're talking about the first week of April, so there were bluebells all over this wood. And it was very, very memorable. Very memorable. I let go of a lot of stuff that week. I let go of a lot of stuff. And it was challenging because I had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to a puja. And a puja is effectively a little bit of chanting a mantra and reciting prayers, for want of a better way of talking about it. It's not really a religious thing, but it's like aspiring to a prayer to recognize your ambition to aspire to be a Buddha, I think is the best way of putting it. So it's recognizing the Buddha that is there, that hasn't emerged yet. So it's the Buddha within. So all of the Buddhas that are set out in this puja room are to represent the Buddha that's inside of you. And as I said, it was just after the Reiki initiation. So the Reiki initiation happened as a result of me living in Stoke Newington, because there were at the time two complementary health centres on Stoke Newington Church Street. I don't think they're there anymore. I can't imagine that they would be there anymore at this point, 25 years later. But they might be. But I think the streets changed considerably since I lived there. When I first moved into Stoke Newington, the whole place was full of squats. It was full of like semi-derelict, large Victorian semi-derelict houses that were being squatted. And it was very, very rough and ready. It's the east end of London, but it's kind of north London and east London combined. So you've got a gang culture there. And Newington Green was just around the corner from me, which is where Jack the Hat McVitie was killed by the Cray twins. If anybody knows the history of East London and the gangs of East London, I'm sure that's where he was killed, is in Newington Green somewhere on Green Lanes. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's where that particular murder happened. Anyway, so I was about half a mile away from there, and it was very, very rough, but it was the place that I wanted to move when I moved to London. I didn't know that initially, but it's the place that I kind of gravitated towards. It's also the place where Mark Bolan was born and grew up. Mark Bolan of T-Rex fame. And one of my heroes when I was a 5-year-old or whatever, in the early 70s. So the Reiki initiation happened literally about 50 yards away from where I was living, at one of these complementary health centres in Stoke Newington. And a guy called Neil Townsend came up from Cornwall. And it turns out that it was the Teramai system of natural healing that I was initiated into. I didn't know at the time. I thought it was just Reiki, but it turns out it was a variation of a system of healing that includes Reiki. So it was Reiki, which is a Japanese system, plus Seikin, which is an Egyptian system, plus the violet flame, which is kind of an alchemical idea, plus a couple of other things as well. But those were the main things that I took away from that particular initiation. And I still use the violet flame and Reiki and Seikin today. I had a client not so long ago, about a month ago, and they needed some violet flame work, so I was helping them to do it themselves. Ultimately, it's a kind of a coaching approach that I take with people these days. So that's the history of it. And Reiki is a Japanese system of hands-on and distance healing. So what that means is you start by having hand positions And then it develops into using symbols. And the symbols are there to kind of open particular types of energy. So there's a power symbol. There's a mental-emotional healing symbol. There's a grounding symbol. There's a past life healing symbol. A distance healing symbol, which is effectively the same thing. A symbol called Zona. I use quite a lot. And it takes you from physical to mental, emotional, and then to mastery is the third level. And mastery is the equivalent of becoming the person who passes on the initiation. So it's going from being a student to being a teacher, or from being on the circumference to being at the center. It's another way of thinking about it. That's probably the most appropriate way to think about it. So the whole process brings you from the circumference into the center, and you become the master teacher. I've done some teaching over the years, but not all that much. Not all that much. And I treat it mostly as a personal healing system, a personal development system. And it's all kind of comes back to that for me. So the healing that I do with other people is a byproduct of that. The things that I do in cafes and occasionally paid sessions with people. But I was working a little bit with a sound editor the other day called Reaper, which is a relatively inexpensive digital audio workstation, basically a sound editor. And it occurred to me that what I'm doing with Reiki, and what I'm doing when I use a system called Immunix, is taking something out and replacing it with something else. And effectively it becomes picking a frequency to increase or decrease. And the two systems are actually frequency-based healing systems. The symbols in Reiki are what opens and closes particular frequencies. And with Immunix, it's more of a word symbolism, but it's the same principle. If you're taking something down a little bit and boosting something up somewhere else, that's effectively the equivalent of editing a sound file. So it's a frequency, kind of, it's a movement in frequency, it's a shift in frequency. All right, so that's kind of the history of where we are. So that's the resonance from 25 years ago. Let's take a look at a piece that I was just listening to as I was thinking about the show. This is on YouTube. It's on Next Level Soul channel on YouTube. And it's Daryl Anker, who's a channel for a terrestrial being called Bashar. And I thought this conversation was worth playing because it's kind of relevant to what I was wanting to talk about. And it came up at exactly the point where I was looking for material to play. So let's play about half an hour of this, and it's don't take it literally, but it's an interesting conversation.
Perspective, and he's trying to describe what's happening to us energetically and mechanically when we think about it in terms of positive and negative energy or a mechanism that we're using. Because look at, I mean, we've got, you know, we are these expanded beings, these unlimited spirits, but we have used the idea of a negative mechanism to limit our consciousness in order to have a physical experience, because we are more than this. So we're using a quote unquote negative mechanism for a positive reason. And that's why it's not just cut and dry, black and white to him. Depends on what you do with it, how you use it.
Now you mentioned Bashar's formula. Can you, there's, I think there's four or five steps in that. Can you just quickly kind of go over those five steps?
Sure. And each of these require, you know, a deeper explanation for people to truly understand how this works. And this is a toolkit. In fact, he actually refers to it as an instruction manual. The same way that you would get an instruction manual to operate a piece of machinery, he said, if you follow the instructions, the machine will work as advertised to your benefit. If you don't, maybe the machine will work, but maybe you'll injure yourself or something else will fall apart in the machine. So the five steps in his instruction manual or the formula are to act on your passion, to do it as fully as you can for as long as you can until you can do it no further, to act on it, and this is a big one for a lot of people, to act on it with absolutely zero assumption or zero insistence on what the outcome of that action should look like or be. Number four, stay in a positive state no matter what happens, because you can get a benefit out of it that way. And number five, you have to allow yourself to really examine your belief systems to find out why you believe what you believe, because very often we just do it out of habit. And so it's those five things allow people to gain an insight and gain, in a sense, control over their lives when they're applying this very specifically and very precisely in their lives. When they do that, all these things start happening that are connected to it. Our lives become synchronistic. More synchronicity happens in our lives. It becomes a path of least resistance. It connects us to other expressions of our excitement. It becomes the driving engine in our lives, giving us the energy to move forward. It reflects to us anything out of alignment within our belief system so that we can examine it and let it go. It connects us to whatever form of support we need. These things happen automatically when you follow those five steps. It's really magical. But it is not just the idea of magic. It's the idea that this is how reality works. He's actually describing to us how we're creating our reality, but we don't know that we're doing it this way. So when we follow those five steps for the reasons that he explains why they're important, then it just opens everything up and you start seeing how everything is connected and how you can take advantage of any situation that happens in your life and see it from a completely different perspective. It's really quite astonishing.
And it's a pretty powerful steps, those five steps. If you can do that, which is not, by the way, easy all the time.
Belief. That's a belief.
I mean, yes.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It is challenging because we are so ingrained in outdated definitions.
Correct. You're right.
I understand that. But he's also said there's no such thing as a difficult situation. Only our definitions make it difficult. So we have to hold on to the idea. This is why it's so important from his perspective to create new definitions, because a lot of metaphysical thought, a lot of spiritual thought is structured on very outdated definitions. And we're not understanding, we may be describing an experience, but we're not necessarily describing the mechanism that is causing the experience, even though we may think we are. So that difference, I mean, let this analogy works, is given. We'll say that the sun sets. We know the sun doesn't set. We know the earth revolves, and that's why we see that experience. So describing the experience of a sunset doesn't describe the mechanism that causes that experience. And this is the vast difference, what he's saying about certain metaphysical concepts we have and why we think they work are not why they work. And by getting caught up in the old definitions, we get caught up in repeating the same patterns, the same habits, and all this kind of stuff, and we can't figure out how to get out of it. It's the new definitions. It's seeing the mechanism for what it is that creates the experience that frees us to see things in a different way, in the same way that when scientists decided, oh, it's the Earth that revolves around the sun, and the sun isn't actually revolving around the Earth, it changed our entire reality. So it's the same thing metaphysically that Bashar is attempting to do for us, is give us definitions that unlock us from the past and propel us toward the future from a completely different perspective.
So those definitions that you're talking about that are outdated, those definitions, when they were created for the time and evolution of the people at that moment in time, which is basically religion. A lot of ideas that were talked about 2,000 years ago don't apply too much right now, because in the Bible, slavery was okay. I mean, pretty much everyone had it back then. Now it's It's frowned upon, and as it should be. But that's an example, a very interesting example of old ideas, old definitions, and old just everything that don't apply to us today, and how it needs to evolve. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, and that's exactly what he's doing. So again, a deeper understanding of the metaphysical side of that evolution, again, is what allows us to understand how reality works more deeply, and allows us to sort of open our eyes and say, oh, you know, I am free to do this. I am free to see things in a different way. I am free to explore something I never thought I could explore because I didn't understand how it actually worked. So now we can do that if we understand the information that he's sharing with us.
And again, I brought this movie up so many times on the show, and I'll continue to bring it up because it is just such a deep onion layered film, which is The Matrix. You're a sci-fi guy. I'm a sci-fi guy. We love that kind of stuff. But the more you look at the first Matrix, the more you understand that journey. As Neo is starting to realize his true nature, he's starting to understand how to bend reality in the Matrix, which is an analogy for our illusion, if you will, our Maya, if you will, the reality we're in. He's able to start bending it. So obviously that's a fantastical way of looking upon it. We're not going to, maybe we could dodge bullets, I'm not sure. But being able to move our reality in a different way, and I've experienced very, very heavily that ability to be able to shift reality in the directions I wanted to go. And it started off with some small little things, but as you get older and you start practicing it more, you start going, no, I think go here, I can go there.
And it's like anything, you practice and you get better at it and your reality starts reflecting that ability. So yeah, I'm seeing insane synchronicities in my life that are just, you know, crazy stuff, but it's becoming the norm. You know, things just happen. Things just show up when they need to, precisely, perfectly. And it's like, okay, you know, that tells me I'm aligned with myself and that I'm applying these things in the way that actually makes me able to steer my life in a better direction. So yeah, there are actual physical results to this.
And I know a lot of people talk about the law of attraction and that the whole secret thing. And there is a, I think that was just such a like top layer of that concept, but it did introduce it to a mass amount of people.
Yes. And actually, Bashar relatively recently talked about how there's a little bit of a misunderstanding with the law of attraction. It is what you put out is what you get back. But I at least as far as I was exposed to it, and it's not wrong. The idea that you have to be of a certain frequency to attract certain things is correct. I think where he's saying we have a little bit of a misunderstanding is we think we have to learn that frequency. What he's saying is it's just the opposite. We are that frequency. That's our natural state. It's our core vibration. And our core vibration is designed to attract everything we need in life. So it's not about having to learn that frequency. It's about getting out of its way. It's about not having beliefs that block that frequency. So it's more a matter of getting things that aren't relevant for us out of the way than it is having to learn how to give off that frequency. That's our natural frequency.
It's kind of like taking layers off of clothes, you're stacked on with tons and tons of coats and jackets and sweaters, and slowly but surely you're pulling it away to get to the true essence of who you are without all that crap on you.
Exactly. If you want the sun to reach your skin, you got to take all those clothes off.
Right. And little by little, but we walk around many with tons and tons of stuff on top of you.
Right. So when people go around thinking, okay, I've got to learn this frequency, it's kind of like they don't really realize that they're wearing all these clothes. You know, it's like they're trying to do something that they're already doing, but don't know they're doing. And it causes a lot of confusion. So if they realize that frequency is really who we are, and we just have to strip off all this other stuff that's not who we are, then it's an easier idea. It's something that we can start looking specifically at. Well, what is in the way of that frequency, rather than what do I do to learn that frequency? You know, because that can be kind of very nebulous. What do I do? You know, but it's like, oh, I can find this negative belief. I can find this fear-based belief within me, and I can let it go. And that clears the way for that frequency to attract what you need, because it's already operating like a lighthouse.
And that's the thing. It's just knowledge. It's just information that we need to – if you don't know what you're looking for, so that's the insanity of what we were talking about, which is like I need to find how to run faster, learn how to run faster with all these coats on. I'm like, you could just take off the coats, but you don't know that you're wearing the coats.
Exactly. And that to me is the essential benefit of Bashar's information. He's exactly telling you what to look for and how to let it go, how to take that coat off, specifically mechanically speaking. It's just like, this is an instruction manual. Unbutton the button, unbutton the button, unbutton the button, take it off. He's literally guiding us that specifically.
Well, it's Plato's allegory of the cave. I mean, it's essentially it. We're trying to let everybody know there's something outside.
Right.
It's not.
Don't be afraid to.
Yeah. Hey, don't be afraid. I know there's a lot of light outside, but go outside. It's much better than this shadow show on the walls that we've been thinking is real.
Exactly. But see, here's the thing. He talks about, you know, the structure of beliefs, positive, negative beliefs, because physical reality isn't real. Beliefs are what make it seem real because they reinforce themselves with emotions and thoughts and behaviors that reinforce the idea that what the belief is telling us is a fact. But when you understand the belief is just a belief, then you can deconstruct it and let it go. But beliefs are designed to perpetuate themselves because they have to, or we wouldn't have a physical experience because physical reality isn't real. So a positive belief, we don't care if it reinforces itself because we like what it's telling us about ourselves. But the negative beliefs have to use sort of negative mechanisms to reinforce themselves. They're not doing it maliciously. It's just the way they're designed to perpetuate a physical experience. So many times a negative belief will have its own set of tools, so to speak, to prevent you from finding it. So it'll make you afraid to look.
Which we talked about earlier, right?
Exactly. So you have to be aware that that is not a fact, that something worse will happen if you go looking for the negative belief. It's just what the negative belief is telling you in order to perpetuate itself so that you can keep having a physical experience. Once you understand that, you have a skeleton key to unlock it, because now you go, oh, it's not a fact. This is just a story it's telling me about myself. I don't have to buy into this story. I can replace it with a different belief and have a different story experience.
And the term story, you know, I've said that so many times, is the story that you tell yourself is the story you live. So if you believe that you are, you know, loved and are worthy of happiness and worthy of you finding your dream and finding your mission in life, and if you're that's all a story. Where earlier in my life, I'm sure you as well, before you started going down this path, you know, you were probably, I mean, I was angry. I was angry. I mean, angry at why I was working with, you know, 23-year-old filmmakers who got $3 million for their feature. I'm like, who the hell gave you this money?
Yeah, exactly. Angry for a lot of reasons. You don't even know why you're angry, you know?
I mean, I can't explain to you how angry I was as a young man for no reason. Because I lived well. I had family who loved me. I had food over my head. I had no major traumas that I can think of, at least, I was pretty good. Looking back, if it was me, I would have slapped myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, wake up. But we pick up a lot of stuff, you know, body language, telepathically, all this stuff, growing up in a society that is angry at not realizing its full potential. See, deep down, we know. You know, we know that we're off base in a lot of ways. And I think that because we haven't had the tools to deal with that specifically, at least not, you know, for the mass consensus, you know, we get angry at ourselves and we get angry at life and we get angry. Why isn't it the way it was in spirit? And, you know, why can't we do this and why can't we do that? We forget that we are here for a reason to learn something until we mature enough to start seeing that idea. So, yeah, we kind of come in picking up all sorts of anger from the society that's been experiencing negative things for thousands of years. And even, like you said, when we have a great benefit in our lives or several benefits in our lives, we tend to ignore that and overlook it because we're just so caught up in this emotional turmoil that is human society on Earth and has been for thousands of years, with few exceptions. You know, but all the great teachers that have come along, you know, whatever, Christ, Buddha, Krishna, whatever, they've all been saying the same thing. And it's not like really follow me, it's be like me. That's what
you're,
it means.
You're absolutely right. Not one of them is like, you must bow down, yeah, you must get, no, you must worship. None of them said that.
No, when, you know, when Jesus says, I am the way, he means be this way and everything will pull together.
He said it.
Yeah, it's not I'm the only one. He even said, you know, you are gods and you will do greater things than I have done. So, you know, people aren't really listening to that because they're so used to feeling worthless and powerless that all they can do is latch on to someone who isn't and follow them. But then a whole bunch of misinterpretations happen because they think that person has all the power and they have none. All these teachers have been trying to tell us we have all the power and we are internally the kingdom of God. You know, it's just people aren't really paying attention, you know.
Right. As Yogananda said, Christ was crucified for one day and his teachings crucified for 2,000 years.
Exactly.
Which is, it's perfect. I'm a perfect, perfect saying. Which I wanted to ask you, because you brought them up, these mm-hmm. kind of masters, these kind of ascended masters, as this, in Eastern philosophy is called, is ascended masters. What is Bouchard's feeling about those teachers, those masters over the course of thousands of years who've come? And there's been many of them. It's not just, yeah. Jesus just happens to have a really good PR person. So does Buddha.
Exactly. Well, he says exactly what I said. It's like, you know, our collective consciousness gives us these opportunities through these beings on a regular basis, every now and then for every culture. And it's our opportunity to really open up and pay attention to what they're telling us instead of falling back into the old definitions. I am powerless. You are all powerful. I have to give you my fealty and I'm worthless and nothing without you. We have to stop listening to that story because that's not the story that these ascended masters are telling us.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I wanted to ask you what Bouchard's definition of a soul is.
A soul is an expression of your consciousness on a certain level that explores expanding itself in a specific number of ways, because there are higher levels to that, some of which have been referred to in literature as oversouls, of course, you know, source, all that is God, and everything in between. But a soul is an individuated reflection of all that is. In the same way, let's say you're standing in the center of a hall of mirrors and you see a reflection. That one reflection is a unique reflection from a unique angle, a unique perspective. To him, that's a soul. But because everything is made of consciousness, it's also conscious. So each individual soul is a unique reflection of God, Goddess, all that is, that has its own unique ability to understand itself, to know itself from that unique perspective, thus adding to the overall experience of all that is of itself. So the soul, the individual soul, can have individual experiences rather than collective ones. It's designed for the purpose of being able to sort of split itself into non-physical and physical consciousness, to have a physical reality experience. I mean, from Bashar's perspective, because physical reality is an illusion, he's saying your natural state is spirit. You are there now. You're in spirit. You're kind of just pretending that you're not. You're dreaming that you're not in spirit. A part of you is dreaming that it's not. But most of you is in spirit. That's your natural state. And I would say, you know, in a sense, that's your individual's soul. Does that explain it enough?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly large question. So I think you did fine. You know, it's like, what's the meaning of life? Like, I mean, it's not a one answer, one sentence yeah. answer. But no, that's a really good, I just wanted to get Bouchard's perspective on that concept of a soul, because it's so, it's been defined so many different ways. again, depending on societal and religious and things.
Yeah, and none of them, in a sense, are wrong definitions. They're just different perspectives of that.
They're different parts of the elephant in the room.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, it goes back to what we're saying about, you know, ascended masters and things where, you know, the way we look at it is, you know, you have all of these antagonistic, excluding kinds of things where, you know, one group is saying, hey, no, Jesus is God. And another group is saying, no, Krishna is God. And another group is saying Jehovah is God. And another group is saying Allah is God. But it's not that Jesus is God, Krishna is God, Allah is God, Jehovah is God. It's that God is Jesus. God is Allah. God is Jehovah. God is Krishna. God is anything and everything and all of us and all that is. We're made of it. We're made of God. There is nothing outside of it from Bashar's perspective. So it's we're reversing the idea back to understanding that none of the religions, in a sense, are wrong. It's just that they're misunderstanding that there's a bigger picture to the idea, and they have a piece of it. They have a reflection of the whole, not the whole, for their culture, for their perspective.
Right. And again, it's just tribal. It's societal. I mean, yeah, depending on wherever you were born is the perspective of morals you're going to get.
Right, exactly. So in a sense, it's just people have to understand that all of those things are true and not just, well, I have the right one and you don't, and you're going to hell because you don't. You know, all of that, in a sense, is true. There are misinterpretations in it, but the thing of it is it's all equal because it doesn't matter what path you take, it all leads to the same understanding.
So you bring up a good point on something that there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now, and there's a lot of quote unquote bad stuff happening, war, things like that. Negative things happening. This is a question I know a lot of people have, so this is why I'm asking it. Why does God allow people like Putin or Hitler?
I think that's the wrong question.
So ask God.
God being everything doesn't need to allow. God just is. It just is.
Okay.
We are making the choices. We have the freedom to choose. That's our greatest power. We can be negative. We can be positive. You have to realize that when you go to a dictionary and look up the word unconditional, it means there are no conditions. If we say, oh, God is unconditional love, we have to really stress the word unconditional. It doesn't matter because everything is God. So, yes, there are negative expressions of it. There are positive expressions of it. But it's in our hands. That's why we're individuated souls. We get to decide how to express the idea. It's not that God willed it or allows it. It just is part of what God is. And we get to decide. The control is in our hands about how we want to express the part of God we are. So we can't blame God for not stepping in and intervening because it's an unconditional experience to exist. We get to decide what that existence is like.
It's just like at the beginning of a football game, one team has God on their side, the other team has God on their side. I mean, they're all both praying to, like, I need to win. I need you. I love the other person, but I want to destroy them today. Can you help me, Jesus? Like, yeah. I always found that fascinating.
Yeah, and likewise, it's like, okay, you know, some people, when good things happen, you know, they go, praise Jesus. Why don't they say praise Jesus when things don't go their way? Isn't that also something that could serve them? You know, but again, it's that tribal, limited focus kind of idea that it's, you know, it's all about me and it's all about my connection and no one else's. And it's just, you know, it's everything. It's everything, and we get to decide what it is. So that's what God is all about, is we get to decide. That's what it means to have free will. Yes, we set up our own destinies, but within that, we have our own free will, too. So it's up to us.
Now, a question I have for you is, do...
All right, so that's Daryl Anker talking philosophically. Waxing lyrical about the nature of God and the nature of existence, and from Bashar's point of view, from the entity that he channels point of view, he takes a many worlds perspective. So there's a combination of things going on. Some of it is similar to what Neville Goddard says about how to maneuver through existence, and I think they're both right about it being a lucid dream, because I think you can navigate from a position of your dominant mood, your dominant emotional base and thought base, so you can feel your way into the next phase of your life, if you like. It's something that I've been doing for years. I didn't really know how to describe it, but I'm quite good at kind of feeling out the next place that I live. I've done that a couple of times in the last 10 years successfully, and once not quite so successfully. Well, it turned into a downward spiral, but I think it was a downward spiral that needed to happen, because if it hadn't happened, I wouldn't have discovered some things about myself that I need to know. And it's difficult to live through those experiences where you're heading in a kind of a restrictive direction, where you're stripped away of all your belongings, all your sense of who you are. And I was angry. I was very, very angry. But it was repressed, and I needed to be in that situation for the anger to come out of me. And when the anger came out, I started to expand again. So, but it needed the compression. For whatever reason, there's no real way to describe the situation I was in, but I got very compressed and very, everything got stripped away through that process. I also tapped into some joy, some self-generated joy that I wouldn't have found otherwise. I don't think I was, because I was looking for it in a very kind of concentrated way, because I was in a concentrated situation, and I found a level of joy that I've never experienced before in what looks from the outside like the worst experience of your life. And it wasn't a particularly pleasant experience, but I found the joy in it. I found the joy in me during that situation. So that nobody can ever take that away from you once you've found it, because you can generate it yourself. And I think everything that's in the lucid dream, that's in the physical reality that is actually a lucid dream, in this way of looking at it, the joy is a key part of how to navigate the dream, which is why Bashar says follow your bliss, follow your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is joy. It's self-generated, joyful, intense kind of connectedness and flow. And that's what I found in that experience when I was living in Hewith before I moved to this particular apartment. I found my ability to generate my own bliss, my own joy, my own enthusiasm for life. And for whatever situation I'm in, I can find it within me. And it doesn't need to be generated from outside. It's a self-generating thing. Joy is, happiness is, all of those types of expressions, they're generated from the inside. You don't find them on the outside necessarily. There are some experiences, some situations that'll provoke it to come out, but it's generated on the inside. It's there on the inside to come out. The same as the anger. It was inside of me because it was trapped, because I couldn't express it properly. And then I found a way to express it at a particular situation that pulled it out. And then Boris Johnson pulled some more anger out of me. The political situation pulled some more anger out of me. And eventually it all kind of comes tumbling out. But it's kind of being pulled out by the situation, but also being given a route to come out. by my psychology at the time. And I've been busy this week with, as I said, with some editing and some live streaming. I've found a place online that I like that I'm going to focus on for the live streaming, which is Locals. So I've just set up a locals.com community, and you can find that at freeassociationradioshow.locals.com. There's a BitChute channel under Radio Projects. There's a Rumble channel under Free Association Radio Show. There's an Odyssey channel under Free Association Radio Show as well. Overall, it's under Radio Projects, but the channel itself is called Free Association Radio Show. And the podcast is called that as well. And you'll see my picture when you... If you look for the podcast on Spotify or Google Podcasts or Player FM or Amazon Podcasts, then you'll see my picture on there. And it looks like I've got half an hour on locals.com for a live stream every week. So at the moment, I'm doing that on Fridays. Or the day might change, but I'm going to make a conscious attempt to do a 20-minute or 30-minute live stream every Friday. And obviously it'll vary with where I am and what I'm doing, but the timing might change slightly, but once a week at the end of the week. So it's kind of a build-up to this show. It's kind of I'm putting my process into the live stream, so wherever I am in the process of developing the show is kind of where the live stream starts. So it becomes a bit of a rehearsal, and a clarifying process, and it becomes part of the process itself for the radio show. So they complement each other, and there's more interaction there. The chat room, for me, the chat situation is better because I can see what's coming in without going backwards and forwards between Element and Skype. So there's that, and I'm happy with the way things are going with the podcast at the moment. I'm happy with the way the BitChute channel's going, and I think the Locals live streaming and community can develop in a similar way, hopefully a little bit quicker. But I was speaking to the woman at the job centre yesterday, and she asked me about the podcast, and I said, yeah, I'm doing it, but I have to be in the right mood for kind of putting a podcast together. There might only be 10 minutes sometimes, and other times I'll find material that I want to share, and I'll do 5 minutes at the beginning and share that material. So the main content that I'm doing is the radio show, and everything else is supplementary to that. But it's a bit of fun, and I'm not taking it 100% seriously. I'm just having a bit of fun with it, and it'll develop as it goes. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up at that point. There's a couple of minutes left, but I think Bashar's said what he needs to say. I've said what I need to say for the day, so I'm going to wrap it up, and I'll see you next week.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
I, you know, I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down and...
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories.
What do you believe?
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings.